Let's thank Van and the band this morning. Man, they bring it as they do every single weekend. Thank you, Van. Hey, really excited you're here today as we're dealing with X-Men. And happy Father's Day, men, by the way. Really excited to see you here. We realize there's a lot of places you could be on a Sunday. And the fact that you've made Crosspoint a part of that is just phenomenal. And we're excited about that. And we're going to take a look in our week three of At the Movies at X-Men. And this is a part of the X-Men franchise. It's really fascinating because we're going to be looking at how to live a life of no regret. How do we live in a way that, you know, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, we never look back and think, you know, man, I wish I wouldn't have done that. I wish I wouldn't have been there. And this is a sci-fi adventure. It's part of the X-Men franchise. Any X-Men fans in the audience today? Just out of curiosity? Wow, quite a few. Excellent. Now, I'm not going to give too much of this movie away if you have not seen it, but it's based around the premise that the X-Men are in trouble. All right, they're in trouble, and I didn't really understand the X-Men very well before I watched the movie. I'm not really a sci-fi fan, so, you know, until I understood they were mutants. You know, these are people that have an extra gene, a mutated gene that basically give them extraordinary abilities, and there's all this bad stuff that's happening in the present, and they get this idea that, man, what if we could send somebody back to the past to actually change what took place, so, and the repercussions of that would be that we have a better future. And so they send Wolverine back in time to fix it. And if you want to find out how that ends, then you need to go watch the movie. All right, it's a good cutoff point there. But it really raises a fascinating question for us. And this is a question that I really want us to wrestle through. And it's one we've probably asked ourselves many times. If I could go back in the past, what is it that I would change? You know, what is that thing, if I could go back and fix, that I would fix? You know, it might be something that's created all kinds of emotional pain for you, and you're like, man, I would go back and change that so I had a different, better future, better present. You know, it might be something you said. You're like, I wish I could just be like, whoop, you know, take it right back in. We can't do that. How many times do we wish that we could have done that? Maybe it's something you still regret today. Maybe it's a decision that you made. In fact, one of the questions that I really want us to kind of wrestle through this morning is a question that comes out of a book named Promise. I just recently came across this book. It's written by a late teen, like a 19, 20-year-old young lady named Tyndall Baldwin, and it's called Promise. The subtitle is Booze, Boys, and Jesus. So that'll pique your interest. It's great. In fact, what drew me to it was it's for young ladies, and I've got a preteen in my house, and so I'm ordering this for her to read. If you got a teenager, great, great book, Promised by Tyndall Baldwin. And she asked this question in the book that I just thought was a phenomenal question. Here's the question. What do you do when your body wants what your heart knows is wrong? What do you do when your body wants what your heart knows is wrong? And I thought about that question. I thought, that right there is where regret is often born. You know, when we were like, man, you know, I know. I mean, isn't that a great question? I mean, some of you are like, that's a terrible question. I wish you would have never brought that up. I mean, I can't stand the fact that it's on the screens for that long. Listen, the great thing about this question right here is, you know, if you could go back a year or 5 years or 10 years or a day or a couple days or the last weekend or the last business trip, the last spring break, and you know, you don't have to imagine what you might do or what that might look like when your body wants something that your heart says is wrong, because you know it, you've experienced it, you remember the dilemma, and you know, we've been at that place. We knew there was something we shouldn't do, but our body said yes, and our heart's going, I'm not sure that's the right thing. And in fact, the way that you answer this question, and the way you answer this question consistently, will likely determine the degree of fulfillment in your life. I mean, this impacts your entire life right here. And, you know, whether it has to do with the purchases that you make and how much debt that creates, or the relationships that you have that leave you with guilt, or you wish maybe you could unmeet some people or unconnect with some people or untext some people or uncall some people or unsex some people, whatever it might be. I mean, you're like, you know, I wish I could undo some of these things. And maybe you're not a Christian, all right? Maybe you got drug in here this morning and you came in to see some friends or something. And they're like, hey, it's Sunday. We go to church. And you're like, wow, I don't go to church, but okay. And so you're here today. Here's the cool thing. Listen, you get free movie tickets, all right? So just being here, you get free movie tickets. I mean, that's, you at least get to go to the movies. But, you know, here's the thing. Regardless of your spiritual orientation, this question is very, very important. Right? What do you do when your body wants what your heart knows is wrong? Because if we get this question wrong, then it has the potential to send us down a path or down several paths that actually cause us to possibly never recover. And so it's a big, big question. And so in light of this question, I want to talk about what does it look like to live a no-regrets life, where I live in such a way that I don't have to look back in the past and wish it would have been done differently. And I want to look at this specifically as it relates to our relationships and specifically as it relates to our sexuality. And so we're going to look at a guy, one of the original X-Men today, a very kind of sultry, spicy story from the Bible, a guy by the name of Samson. All right, you got to read your Bible. You didn't know there were stories like that in the Bible, all right? This is like the original kind of like soft porn story, all right? Not really. But I mean, as you read this, you're going to be like, this is where it all starts. The Old Testament is kind of like laden with, you know, dysfunction. And so, but Samson was the first X-Man, all right? He had this extraordinary thing that caused him to actually be able to do things other people couldn't do. And so we're going to look at this book in the Old Testament, the book of Judges. I know you all know exactly what's going on because it's at the top of your reading list, the book of Judges. You didn't even know there was a book called Judges in the Old Testament for some of us. And here's why this is unique. All right, what's unique about the nation of Israel, and this is the nation of Israel in the book of Judges, that it's about 300 years after Moses, whom we looked at a few weeks ago. And what's going on is they have this cycle of disobedience going on. And so they would disobey God's law. Here's how it would go. They would disobey God, and then that would be followed by disaster. And after that, there would be a consequence to their decision. And that's just like all of us have done, right? And then, you know, somewhere along the line, there comes a deliverer. There comes somebody who's a judge or a military leader that comes and fixes it all, makes everything right, kind of gets everything straightened out. And those people would say the same thing you and I say. We're like, you know, God, please get me out of this. I promise if you get me out of this, I'll never go there again. Or we're saying, God, please, when I get home, let my parents be asleep. And I promise I will never stay out past my curfew. I mean, we've done that, right? God, please, I promise. So this is what's going on in the book of Judges right here, all right? And the next thing you know, everything works out fine, and bam, you're back in trouble again. And so that's what's going on with the nation of Israel in the book of Judges. And so Israel went through this over and over and over again, and God would provide a judge or a military leader, some leader, to basically deliver them, to rescue them, and then they would go through the process again. And so at the end of the book of Judges, there's kind of this dark, ominous statement that's made at the very end of the book. Here's what it says. It says, in those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. In other words, everybody pretty much looked around, said, all right, what are they doing? Okay, here's what we're going to do. Right, there was no looking up to God. There was no looking to God to determine what to do. It was always just looking at everybody else. And so over time, they just looked around. And honestly, we can relate to that, right? We oftentimes fail to look to God. You know, that's why we have regrets. Because we look at what everybody else is doing and we do what's right in our own eyes. And so the Israelites, they expressed their freedom. They thought the way they should do that, not necessarily with a care to how that related to God. And they thought they were actually choosing freedom only to find that they were losing it and they ended up in a place that they constantly and continually did not want to be. And that's the place of regret over and over again. So I want to tell you a little bit about this guy by the name of Samson, the story of Samson. Now, the reason Samson's so important in the book of Judges, the reason Samson's so important to the nation of Israel, really to all of us, is I think you're going to see today, there's a little bit of Samson in every single one of us. All right, now Samson's birth stories, just like all the big birth stories in the Old Testament, the New Testament, you know, whenever some big figure was born, it's always the same story, right? You got a mom and a dad, and they're like, we can't have any kids. And they're like, we're too old. We've never been able to do this. And God comes to them and God says, you're going to be with child, the hand of God is on you, and behold, you're going to have a son, of course, because it's always a son. It's never a daughter for some reason. It's always a son. So, you know, whoever said that, I heard one call out. Maybe there are more of you, but they're going to have a son, and God's hand is going to be on Samson, and God's hand is going to be on him and let him do extraordinary things. I want Samson to be set apart from all the other men. I want him to live a different kind of life. And so this is super important right here. This is a story of how Samson's life begins, because God's saying to his parents, there's going to be something special with your son. Your son's going to have extraordinary abilities that other people don't have. And he's going to use these to honor God. That's the intention for him. I want you to be separate. I want him to be called out. You're going to raise him differently. And so one of the things that God asked his parents to instill in his life is what's called this Nazirite vow. Now, a Nazirite vow was basically three things. Number one was you couldn't have any grapes or grape juice or wine. So no, nothing made of grapes. Number two was he couldn't touch anything that was dead. All right, now I still don't quite get how you do this, all right? I mean, it's like when the mosquito's there, do you just like wound it? Instead of smacking it, I mean, what do? You can't touch anything that's dead. And then the third one was that he was to never cut his hair. Now, typically, a Nazirite vow was for like 30 days, maybe for 60 days. The person choosing to go by these three things chose that for their life, you know. And basically, it was to get God's attention. So it was done for a period of time in order for God to see, hey, you're doing something different. You're setting yourself apart. And in Samson's case, poor guy, I mean, he didn't have a choice in this, all right? His parents come to him when he's like 7 or 8, and they're like, all right, Samson, the reason your hair is so long, the reason we haven't been giving you a haircut is because you are living under this Nazirite vow. It's what God said. And it's not for 60 days. It's not for 90 days. It's for your whole life. And so Samson didn't have any choice in this deal. The only choice he had was whether he was going to lean into it or not. Now, my theory with Samson, I don't know, this may be way off, all right? Samson's this, you know, you think of Samson as extraordinary strength, powerful guy. And when you see a guy, like, lift extraordinarily strong, heavy things, you know, I don't think anybody was standing there saying, oh, my word. I think they were, you know, because if you expect somebody strong and ripped, you just expect that that can be the case. But see, I think Samson looked a lot like me. I think Samson looked a lot like you because you're not in shape either. I think when people saw him, they were like, oh my word, that must be magic because there's no way you could lift that thing. I think Samson, I don't think he looked all ripped. It was when the hand of God was on him, he received extraordinary strength. So, Samson's in his teenage years. And at some point, people begin to identify, man, this dude's got some leadership skills. So they put him on border patrol, on the border between the Israelites and the Philistines, or the Philistines, however you like to say it. And he's defending his country against the Philistines. All right, and the problem with it Samson had is he didn't like to stay on his side of the border. All right, he'd kind of wander across the border into the villages, and he liked the women on the Philistine side. Now, granted, they're at war with these women, all right? So he's making his way into the little villages with the Philistines, and he's spending all this time with their women. And in fact, he really liked the ladies. So the very first thing it says that we read about him in Judges 14 is this. It says, Samson went down to Timnah, and he saw there, and this is what got him into trouble every time, he saw there a young Philistine woman. And then check this out. It says, when he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now, get her for me. Get her for me as my wife. All right, how's that? He's like, I want her. And this is kind of awkward right here, all right? This is like, they're like, Samson, you understand, we're like war with these people, right? I mean, you're like going into the enemy territory, and you're like getting down with the women and the other villages with the other people. And this, like, dude, you should not be over there. Should not be across the border. And so here's what it says. His father and mother replied. This is so parents right here, okay? His father and mother replied, isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives? So apparently this was South Israel, all right? That's where they do stuff like that. Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go into the uncircumcised Philistines to get your wife? Now, that was kind of a little dig, that last line. Because, see, the nation of Israel, one of the qualifying or the things that set them apart was their men were circumcised. And that was kind of a defining characteristic of God's chosen people. And so, you know, they're like, look, Samson, seriously, these people aren't even, the Philistines aren't even God's chosen people. I mean, what are you doing? You shouldn't be. Samson, God's hand is on you. God has something special going on for your life. I mean, of all people that should be going across the border and trying to hook up with their women, it's not you. I mean, what are you doing here, Samson? And plus, it's against the law, all right? It's against the law. God said, don't marry their women. And this isn't God being like against interracial marriage, all right? This is God saying, hey, Samson, when you marry outside of your people, then you it begins to dilute and pollute your theology. And it begins to dilute your faith. All right? Because see, when two people would get married, they'd bring all their household gods into that common home where, that they joined together. And that was kind of common. Everybody had their household gods. So if you marry someone that serves a different god, you're bringing both of your household gods, and it just dilutes your faith in God. It's kind of like this, right? Some of you are looking at me like, what are you talking about? For those of you who went to IU, all right? You go to IU, and you graduated a Hoosier, you know, and then all of a sudden you get out and you meet somebody from Purdue. You know, and all of a sudden, you're like, you both have your household idols, right? I mean, you got your posters and your sweatshirts and all your memorabilia, and you get married, and all of a sudden, there's something funky going on in that house with Purdue and IU, and you're like sewing shirts together, half one, half, you know. It just gets funky, all right? It's weird. That's kind of the best analogy I can give you, all right? So, and by the way, Samson, have you not noticed we're at war with the girls that you're going after? Come on, Samson, you're a border guard, which means you need to stay on the border. You don't cross the border. We shouldn't be having this conversation. It says, but Samson said to his father, get her for me. She's the right one for me. Now, what's interesting about that word right there, right, is that's the same word in the original language, Hebrew text, as the word I showed you a few minutes ago at the very end of the book of Judges, where it says everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Samson said, hey, in my eyes, this girl's the right one. So this whole story is, I mean, it's a disaster. I mean, he goes down into Philistine, and he gets married, and she wants to have the wedding at her church on her side of the border, and, you know, and he kind of pisses them all off because he's there at war with his people, and, you know, all of a sudden, they're kicking Samson out of their country, and they take his new wife, and they marry her off to a different guy in the Philistines community, and they don't even like that. They're like, you know, we're so upset that Samson's wife actually had any association with him. They actually burned her alive. It didn't turn out very well, clearly. All right, and so then there's another story where he basically does the same thing. He doesn't get married, but he's down, you know, sleeping over with the prostitutes and the women in the Philistine community. And he has to, like, do this supernatural, like, feat of strength to break out of something, to use his God-given ability to get out of a situation he created. And he's just totally being irresponsible. And I mean, the dude has woman problems everywhere he goes because he's doing what's right in his own eyes. I mean, that's a summary of the story. You had to go back and read it. It's a great story. You had to read your Bible. It's very spicy. I mean, this is a great story, all right? Now, this is the point in the story where the story begins to slow down, all right? And in comes the figure that you've probably all heard of. Her name is Delilah, Samson and Delilah. And when you hear this story, if you've heard this story, you might be thinking probably more the women than the men, all right? But you hear this story, and you're going to think, could any man be this stupid? I mean, seriously. I mean, is it possible that a man could be so worked up over a woman? I mean, so drawn to her, so worked up that he makes the same stupid decision over and over and over again. And men, you all know that the answer to that question is yes, thank you, second, third rows. The front row's got it, right? Those of you in your back, you're like, I don't know what he's talking about, honey. I don't know anything about that. I get it. You're with your wife. You're with your spouse. You want to admit it. All right, so, you know, so you read this story, and we're going to go, how could Samson be so stupid? All right, I mean, and every man here this morning, every man listening to the podcast this week online, at some point, we've all been to the place where we're just like, how could I be so stupid? I mean, you can think back a week or a month or a few years and immediately go to that place, you know, where there's an image of a woman or the idea of a woman, and you were just so, you did the dumbest things in that moment. And you've spent money in places that you don't want anybody to know about. You don't even like the fact that I'm bringing it up this morning. And you know why this is? It's because sex is incredibly powerful. It's incredibly powerful. The desire for sex overpowers his ability to make good decisions. And, you know, men, listen, ladies, we're pretty simple as guys, all right? Men are pretty simple. We basically need three things. We need food, sex, and an occasional pat on the head, all right? I mean, you know, and a pat on the head's like, yeah, we need you to be every now and be like, hey, good job, you did great. You know, we need to come home from work, and you're like, hey, great job at work, you're doing so good. Now go back to work, get on with you, you know. We need that, all right? And if we had to choose one of the three, let's just say we'd probably all be starving, all right? So ladies, some of you ladies, you're like, I love this church. This is why I love this church. All right, ladies, well, here, don't go too far, all right? Ladies, here, we're stupid And part of the reason we're stupid is because you participate with us, all right? And this is what I would call you. Sometimes you're so naive when it comes to your interactions with us. And now nobody leave yet, all right? Let me finish this thought before you walk out. All right, now it's important. Now, if you believe in evolution, all right, if you believe in evolution explains everything, ladies, don't you think that after thousands of years of men doing the same gig, of lying, of, you know, telling you stuff that's not necessarily true, don't you think over the years that the naivete in a woman regarding a man would kind of start to be evolved off? I mean, don't you think? I mean, why is it that generation after generation, you know, we have the same experiences over and over? You fall for the same lies over and over and over again. You're like, well, honey, I love you. I know what I did was stupid, but I love you. Oh, okay. You know, I mean, you fall for those. I mean, you know, well, honey, let's just see if we're compatible. I mean, you know, just move in. Let's see if we're compatible. And you're like, do I look like a car? I mean, do I look like something to see if, you know, how to take a test drive in? You know, this is a good line. I hear this one every now and then. Pre-married couples. Well, gosh, you know, God didn't give me this desire to not be used. You know, I mean, listen, you know, ladies, you fall for these things, all right? And here's the thing. Oprah's only been off the air like 3 years, and yet you forgot everything she taught you. All right? I mean, she taught you this stuff. Okay? So while I'm picking on women, let me a couple of things, and I'll get back to Samson. Two more pieces of advice for you women, and not like I have anything to say on this, all right? But here's the thing, two things, ladies. If you're not married, if you're dating someone, if you're hoping to be married at some point, if you're single again, wanting to get married, here's something you need to remember. All right, here's what it is: if he can't afford to marry you, he can't afford you. All right, and that's not you being a princess. That's not you being high maintenance. That's just, you know, here's the whole thing. I hear it all the time. Well, we just can't afford to get married. And here's what I'd say to you. If he can't afford to marry you, then he can't afford you. And that's not me being old-fashioned. Listen, I hear stories all the time, and you know your story. And I'm like, but this is our story, and we're struggling, and he's trying to find a job. If he can't afford to marry you, he can't afford you. All right, and listen, ladies, you got your story, you maybe know your girlfriend's story. Listen, I hear hundreds of stories. I've heard hundreds of stories of women who have fallen for that line and had their hearts broken. So I got a little line for you, women. Here's what you say. If you're in that situation, you say this. You say, you ring it, and then I'll bring it. All right, if you ain't ringing it, I ain't bringing it. All right, there's your line right there. You can just call him up today. Hey, if you ain't ringing it, I ain't bringing it. We're done, all right? That's a great line for you. All right, and then I hear the line about, well, you know, we need to move in and see if, and teenagers, you need to be aware of this. It's coming for you down the road. All right, you know, we need to move in and see if we're sexually compatible. What does that mean? All right, I mean, you know, here's the thing. Listen, this is weird for me to say, but if somebody's got to say it, all right? Ladies, you are sexually compatible with thousands of men, all right? Thousands, all right? Sexual compatibility is not a reason for anything. It's just an observation, all right? It's just an observation. If you, any man that uses that line is either stupid or lying. We've already established half of that, all right? So just remember that, all right? Just remember that. One more, ladies, and I'll get back to Samson. One other piece of advice. All right, here, this one it might be really offensive to you. God designed your body, ladies, to be the dessert, not the appetizer, all right? He designed it to be the dessert, not the appetizer. What I mean by that is if your body is meant to be the dessert, and if you're serving up the appetizer all the time, it's no wonder nobody's staying around for the main course, right? It's why some of your relationships, your dating relationships, always end in the same way, because you're always serving up your body as the appetizer when it's meant to come after the main thing. And one of the reasons that's the case is because sex is such a powerful thing. It's a wonderful thing, but when it's engaged in outside of the guardrails, outside of God's parameters, it becomes a very disastrous, destructive thing. And listen, you don't have to be a Christian to believe that. Right? All you have to have is a little life experience, and you're like, you know what, Kurt, that's true. That's exactly right. So I'm telling you, this breaks my heart. I mean, I'm a father of three daughters, and I watch, you know, what I see young ladies, 20s, 30s, 40s, sometimes in their 50s, 60s doing with their bodies, with people they're not married to, and it breaks my heart. So back to Samson. Somewhere along the line, Samson falls in love with Delilah. All right, and once again, he's creeping around in places he shouldn't be. And this isn't like a one-night stand. He's like, oh, my word, OMG, this is it right here. This is the woman. I mean, the first one, she burned up. She was burned alive. That didn't work. Let's get past that. I got a new one right here. All right, I got a new one. This is it. This is the right one. And the rulers, the Philistines, the rulers among them, they hear about this. They can't stand Samson. They already had encounters with him. And they go to Delilah, and they're like, Delilah, we need you to help us capture him. And so take a look at what it says right here in chapter 16. It says, see if you can lure him. Now think about that word lure for a moment. Do you know what a lure is? A lure is something that's not real that you use to jiggle in front of fish. And it has hooks in it. So just think about that thought for a moment. All right, so see if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how you can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us, there were about five of them there, each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver, which is probably like $90,000, give or take. It's kind of hard to do inflation over 2,300 years, but it's about $90,000, right? Now, you ready for the rest of the story? This is a kicker right here. Look at this. It's going to blow you away. So Delilah said to Samson, tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued. I mean, seriously, do you think it has to be that obvious? I mean, I don't think this happened over coffee in the morning. I think this is when she's being the dessert, all right? I think this is that moment where she's like, can you just tell me how I can tie you up? All right, I mean, this is crazy right here. And I think he's already subdued, if we can be honest, right? And you know, he's like, what are you talking about? And then look what he does next. And Samson answered her, if anyone ties me with seven fresh bowstrings. I don't know where he got that idea. Some fetish or something. I don't know. If someone ties me with seven fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, I will become weak. And here's the key phrase, as any other man. See, he has extraordinary strength, and he'll become weak in that moment as any other man. And you read this story, and you begin to say, dude, what are you doing, Samson? What are you doing? Do you understand you're like giving your life away right here? Do you realize God's hand is on you? Dude, you should not be dipping in this well right here. All right, and then it continues. It says, then the rulers of the Philistines brought her seven fresh bowstrings. Hello, just like you said, that had not been dried, and she tied him with them, with men hidden in the room. Now, don't judge that statement. All right, don't judge that because some of you have webcams in your room. All right, with men hidden in the room, she called to him, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. But he snapped the bowstrings as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. I mean, he just like breaks out of it, just like he's dental floss on him or something like this. And Delilah, whereas this should have been the end of the relationship, right? I mean, a lot of deceit going on right here. Delilah said to Samson, you've made a fool and lied to me. Which is like, time out. Okay. So you're accusing Samson of lying to you? I mean, is that not what you're doing to him? I mean, my word, what a great relationship we have going on right here. I mean, everybody's smiling. Everybody's getting all they can't get enough of each other. She says, come on, tell me how you can be tied. And he says, well, it's not bowstrings. Actually, you have to have new rope. You need new rope. That's what will subdue me. And so, of course, you know, she goes out and gets brand new rope. She gets him drunk. He passes out. While he's sleeping, she ties him up. One of the ways she wakes him is she says, the Philistines are coming. Because remember, he's a border control guard. So she's like, the Philistines are coming. He way shoots up, busts through the new rope. I mean, that obviously didn't subdue him. And then all of a sudden it says, then Delilah said to Samson, this is after round two, mind you. All this time, you've been making a fool of me and lying to me. I mean, she's like, I can't believe you're doing this. Tell me how you can be tied. Basically, so you can become like every other man. He's like, all right. I've been lying to you. I confess it. Here's what you need to do. I mean, you're like, seriously, Samson? I mean, dude, two times. I mean, how can you be so stupid, Samson? I mean, that's what we're all thinking right here, right? And it's not like he's stupid as Samson. He's just stupid because he's a man. Because his desire for this woman is overpowering common sense. And so here's what he says. He's getting awful close to it right here. If you weave the seven braids of my head into the fabric of the loom, So she goes to the Singer, and she buys herself a sewing machine. All right, she goes, gets a sewing machine, some part of a loom, something like that. You know, she gets him drunk, he passes out. While he's passed out, she starts sewing the braids of his head, you know, in this loom. And of course, all of a sudden, she tries to wake him, and she's like, the Philistines are coming. And boom, he breaks out, he breaks the sewing machine, he breaks through the loom, whatever's going on. And this is what she said to him. It says, after, you know, this is like time three now. She says, how can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This is the third time you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret to your great strength. Now, this next part, ladies, this is actually in the Bible, so don't get mad at me. All right, it says, with such nagging, all right, it's in the Bible, she prodded him day after day, and get this, until he was sick to death of it. So basically, when the sex didn't work, the nagging got him. All right? So he told her. It says next, so he told her everything. No razor has ever been used on my head, he said, because I have been a Nazirite dedicated to God. He said, you know, when I was born, God said, my hand is on you. Samson, when you were born, I've got something special. I want to set you apart. I don't want you to be like any other man. I want you to live differently. I want you to stand out. You're going to have supernatural abilities like no one else has. And you're looking at this and you're like, what are you doing, Samson? How stupid could you be? I mean, you're getting ready to throw this all away. He's like, but I love her. I love Delilah. She's the right one in my own eyes for me. So he tells her the truth. I've been a Nazirite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become as weak as any other man. So, of course, she goes out and gets him drunk, passes out. He wakes up with a haircut. She tries to wake him up. The Philistines are coming. And he expects to get up and bust through just like he did before with his great strength, except he can't because the Spirit of God has left him. And it says, then the Philistines seized him. They gouged his eyes, which was the whole problem the whole time. They took him down to Gaza, binding him with bronze shackles just in case the strength came back, and they set him to grinding grain in the prison. And he dies, shackled, bound, a prisoner. He dies, never fulfilling that which God gave him to do. And we read the story, and you're like, how could somebody be so stupid? Well, it's simple. It's simple. It's because he did what he thought was right in his own eyes. I mean, when you ignore that small voice of God, when you ignore that kingdom conscience, when you ignore, you know, those promptings to yield to God. See, Samson never yielded to God, the Creator, in this. There are all kinds of moments, all kinds of signs, all kinds of, you know, warning signs on the side of the road. He just kept stepping outside the guardrails. And eventually, just like Samson, you and I, we get ourselves in trouble. We do stupid things that we regret. And down the road, we look back and we're like, oh, how could I be so stupid? It's so clear now. How could I be so naive? And here's why I tell you this whole story. Because you have no idea what God wants to do in and through your life. You really don't. I don't. I don't know what fully God wants to do in and through my life. You have no idea what God wants to do through your life as you yield it to Him, especially when it comes to your expressions of sexuality. And you say, but Kurt, listen, I'm not Samson. I mean, I didn't have some grand birth announcement when I was born. Heck, I don't even know my parents very well. I mean, maybe you don't even know your parents at all. I was adopted. I don't even know my parents. I mean, I didn't come from a great home. Listen, the only announcement that happened in my home was when mom and dad were like, hey, Johnny, did you realize you were an accident? I mean, you should have figured it out when you're only 11 months, you know, younger than your sister. You should have known that. That's the only announcement I ever had in my life. Kurt, there's nothing special about me. All right, I want you to listen to this. If you've ever said those things, I want you to listen. This is amazing right here. 2,300 years later, all right, after the story of Samson, there's another Jewish guy by the name of Paul. And he's a guy whose life has been radically changed by Jesus Christ. And here's what he writes to the Gentiles, the outsiders as well as the Jews, in 1 Corinthians. He says, do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit? And you're like, what? He's like, yeah, did you not know that? Did you not know that the same spirit that rested on the nation of Israel, the same spirit that rested on Samson said, hey, Samson, I want you to be set apart. I've got extraordinary things for you to be about. Did you not know that that same spirit, when you receive Christ into your life, if you're somebody who calls yourself a Christian, then that spirit comes on you and God's spirit dwells in you and God has great plans that you have yet to even understand? Do you realize it's the same spirit that rested on Samson? Yeah, he kept getting outside the guardrails. And yet it was there. Gave him multiple opportunities to turn and go a different direction. He just kept going outside the lines. Do you not know that this is in you whom you have received from God? Get this line. You're not your own. Paul says, you're not your own. He says, you actually don't own yourself anymore. He says, you've been set apart. You're not your own. You've been set apart by God. And he said, God purchased you. He says, you are bought with a price. Therefore, and that always means conclusion. That always means, hey, here's what you're supposed to do. Therefore, honor God with your bodies. See, you and I, we have a lot of Samson in us. Right? Just like the nation of Israel had the Spirit of God on them, just like Samson had the Spirit of God. You know, if you've ever put your faith in Jesus, then God's Spirit resides in you. And the last thing that I want for you 20 years down the road, 30 years down the road, is for you to look back at your life and saying, man, if I would have just yielded to God in this moment, my life, my future, my present would be so much different. If only I would have allowed God to invade my heart. If only I would listen to those small little promptings. But if you keep looking around like Israel, if you keep looking around like Samson did, if we keep looking around left and right, trying to figure out what's right in our own eyes, especially when it comes to what everyone else is doing relationally and sexually, you'll come to a place in your life where all you have is regret. Regret. It's not because God's not pro-sex. It's not because God gets offended. It's not because God's holding out on us. Those are all the lies we tell ourselves. Listen, you know, God doesn't want you to give up your incredible potential for something that lasts a weekend, something that lasts a week, for something that lasts a season where you can't even remember her last name and you didn't even find out his first name. But I'm telling you, the when it comes to regret, there's nothing like sexual sin. There just isn't. I mean, I'll have people come into my office periodically and all your things like, well, you know, Kurt, I've never trusted somebody enough to tell them that I have 4 parking tickets. I never hear that. Nobody ever says that to me, all right? I mean, I never hear somebody come in my office or, you know, when I meet with them at Starbucks and they're like, Kurt, I've just never even been able to get these words out, but I feel like it's finally time to do it. I text and drive. See, those things just don't come. You know what I hear? You know what I do hear? I hear people say, you know, Kurt, I've never trusted somebody enough to tell them that I had an affair 2 years ago. How could I be so stupid? I've never been able to get the words out that, you know, at spring break last year or last business trip. How could I have been so stupid? Back to the question. What do you do when your body wants what your heart knows is wrong? What do you do when your body wants what your heart knows is wrong? And I don't know where this falls for you this morning. What I do know is that every single one of us need to wrestle through that question. And what it has to do with our relationships, what it has to do with the decisions we're making this week, especially with what it has to do with our sexual decisions we're making this week, regardless of whether you're married, unmarried, single, dating, you know, single again, wherever you are, what does that mean for me? What does it mean to yield to God in these moments? And what I want you to do is take out your connection card. On the back side are some next steps. And we're going to give you some prompts, some things to just say, okay, here's what I'm going to do with this. And we do this every week because this is a spiritual moment right here. This isn't just about marking something on a card. This is about saying, God, what is it you're nudging me to do this week? God, what is it that I need to yield to you this week? What relationship needs to end? What are some of the boundaries that need to be drawn? You know, maybe you need to use the line, hey, if you ain't ringing it, I ain't bringing it. Maybe that's your statement this week. You know, that's part of your yielding to God. Where do I need to stop creeping across the border into the other territory? That's what got Samson in trouble every single time. And would you specifically be willing to say, God, I'm going to honor you with my body when it comes to your sexuality? I want you to think about what that means for you this week as you walk this out. Listen to the words of this song as the band plays.